Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Angelo Remora joins me here today, and you can learn what he is up to by going to his website, ohiocashflow.com. And you can probably guess by that name, we're going to be discussing almost everything real estate investing, but primarily turnkey investing today. Really appreciate your time, Angelo.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
So first of all, you can tell by your Ohioan accent that you're originally from there.
You know what's funny, mate? People always ask me, where are you from? And I tell them North Carolina, just so I can avoid all of the discussions about snakes and crocodiles and all of the deadly animals in Australia, mate. But no, it's actually quite a funny story, mate. So I was born in Australia. My parents are from Croatia. Grandparents Italian. Now I've been living in the U.S. for the last 12 years. So it's, again, I joke around, I'm from North Carolina. And then my other joke is, I'm from the world. Take a seat. Let me tell you a story about where I'm from.
You're a personal melting pot.
Yep. There you go, mate. There you go.
So why Ohio?
Because of all of the beautiful beaches, mate, and the weather. No, mate, look, why Ohio? I initially started my real estate investment journey in Australia. Bought a lot of properties there. Got into a ton of debt. I was losing a lot of money on the monthly mortgage repayments. And I was very fortunate to wake up and smell the roses and come to the realization that investing in real estate should be about putting money in your pocket, not taking money out of it. And this was around 2012 at the time. The Australian dollar was one for one with the American. The U.S. economy was just coming out of the global financial crisis. And, you know, being in real estate and investing in real estate, of course, the U.S. real estate market came across my desk. You know, all of the buzzwords, once in a lifetime opportunity. And once I saw the numbers on offer here in the U.S. across the board, I was just absolutely mesmerized. I thought it was too good to be true. I couldn't believe it. I had to be a part of it. And literally, mate, within 6 months, I packed my bags, left everything and everyone behind and moved into the unknown. I initially got off the boat, as I like to joke around, in Kansas City, bought a property there, flipped it, made a huge profit. And I was like, bloody hell, mate, this is better than sliced bread. I couldn't believe it. And then one thing led to another. You know, as the saying goes, your network equals your net worth. And I'm a big networker. So I had a lot of relationships that I established all over the country, but specifically in Ohio and specifically in Toledo. Excuse me, out of all of the places, Toledo, Ohio, right? And once I saw the opportunities there in that market, I know it's a tertiary market. It's a bit of a boring place to be in from a real estate investment standpoint. Been there since 2014. Own Ohio Cashflow Turnkey Company, Oz Realty Property Management Company. We also have a brokerage, and I've invested in all kinds of different avenues, from crypto to stocks to oil funds. I've bought real estate all over the world. Anyway, that aside, yeah, man, I was just absolutely mesmerized with the bang for your buck that was on offer in Toledo specifically. And I just had to move there. And I moved there, started Ohio Cashflow, worked very hard, and mate, fast forward to this day, I stopped counting at 1,000 flips. We got a large property management company, and life is good, mate. I can't complain. God bless America. It's the best country in the world. I love it here.
Well, you know, there's a huge leap of faith there, and there has to be a huge level of conviction that you went through to leave Australia like you did. It's kind of a wing and a prayer when it comes to this. You were just that convinced that real estate was still the right vehicle to make such a huge shift in your life.
Mate, great question. I you know, people don't speak highly enough of that. They don't understand what it takes to just move to another country. Granted, the language is the same. It's similar. I mean, you guys say a porch, we say veranda. You guys say trunk, we say boot. You guys say candy, we say lollies. But you know, that aside, the language is the same, but it's just a different culture. To a certain degree, different terminologies, different laws, different regulations, different way business functions. And I was here by myself. So to be honest with you, mate, I was pretty depressed for a good year and a half. But me being me, not the most sophisticated individual, Jack, not the smartest. I quit school at a very young age, so I've got no formal education. I guess not being as sophisticated as other people, maybe you don't realize the fear factor as much and the consequences and the risk. So I just decided to take the leap of faith, mate. You got nothing to lose at the end of the day. You know, I could always go back to Australia. I could always be laboring on construction sites like I was over there. So I could always go back to that. And if I made it like I did, you know, thank God, you know, here we are today. So,
well, I think you're kind of proof positive of something that I say over and over again. That's persistent, consistent behavior will trump everything when it comes to, well, career for that matter, not necessarily real estate investing. If you're persistent and consistent, it's shocking what you can accomplish.
100%, mate. Make a passion and obsession and you'll never work a day in your life again, or it won't feel like work. Look, I've been fanatical about soccer, football, as they call it in the world. And I've been playing the game since I was 5 years old. And that's a reason why I quit school when I was 14 to pursue the dream of becoming a professional soccer player. And I was infatuated with it. It was an obsession. I would sleep with a soccer ball. And I replaced that infatuation and obsession with the sport, with business, entrepreneurship, real estate, finance, stocks. And yeah, mate, you know, that's one thing. I literally, my whole life evolved around real estate. And in a way, it does to this day too. And then the other thing is just absolute, pure, hard yakka, as we call it in Australia. You know, nothing comes easy, mate. The world we live in today, I'm not too fond of it, Jack. I'm a little bit worried what's going to happen in the next 20 to 30 years. I'm seeing Gen Z. I'm seeing a lot of laziness. I'm seeing a lot of expectation of something for nothing. I don't like the way it's going, mate. It's not my cup of tea. It's not how I was born and bred, and it's not how you achieve anything in life. You have to work. You have to work really, really extremely hard to achieve any kind of success, be it business, be it financial, be it relationships, be it to be fit. You know, you have to get up, you have to go do the work, you have to show up, and the rest kind of looks after itself. You know, people ask me, Ange, how did you do what you did? I said it was very simple. I set my alarm for 5:30 a.m. I would be in the office at 6 a.m. and I wouldn't finish until 7 p.m. And what would you do? Well, I don't know. I'd figure it out. One thing leads to another. Sit your ass in a chair, put the laptop in front of you, have an idea of what you want to do and just pursue that every single day. And eventually one thing leads to another. And before you know it, you're going to have four companies, 50 full-time staff and a monster with 17 heads.
Wow. So you mentioned dropping out of school, but you did it at quite a young age. I don't think that's possible in the United States at the age that you did. I read that you dropped out at 14.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very fortunate, mate, that my parents let me do that because I just hated it. I just absolutely hated it. I couldn't stand being in a classroom. I would get very anxious. I'd get panic attacks. I couldn't listen to someone preach something that I do not want to listen to. And thankfully, I've got amazing parents. They didn't push me, because I think if they kept pushing me to go do something that I didn't want to do, they probably would have broken me, my character, my psyche. And they didn't. And I know my mom, my whole life, she was always saying, son, you know, in a way, Jim Rohn's quote, formal education will earn you a living while personal development will give you a lifestyle, right? She would always say, you know, life is the best lesson. Life is the best teacher, not school. Just do good enough. You know, you need to learn how to write. You need to learn how to read. But then at the end of the day, after, it's up to you. It's funny, mate. I've got people that have Harvard degrees that have worked for me. You know what I mean? So it's actually amazing how it comes full circle. But yeah, I'm very thankful that they didn't push me, because I think if they did, that would have broken me as an individual. And, you know, I was so obsessed with soccer. Another blessing was replacing that passion and obsession that I had with soccer. And it's mesmerizing to me that I can read, you know, detailed data and profit and loss statements and predictions and for analyst forecasts. I watch CNBC 10 hours a day and I love this shit, Jack. You know what I mean? But if you try and get me to calculate or do algebra or something like that, I'll probably start getting a panic attack. I can't stand this. So it's interesting how the human mind works, you know?
Right. Well, I would imagine, you know, picking up and moving to the United States, what type of feedback did you get from family and friends?
You know, in my book, and I'm not plugging my book, by the way, I'll give it away for free to whoever wants it. In my book, I say the people that are going to bring you down the first are the ones closest to you, because they're the closest to your ear and what they say matters, and it can affect you emotionally. And then right, our thoughts dictate our emotions dictate our actions, right? So look, mate, I mean, it wasn't really positive, to be honest with you. I mean, you're going a world away. Maybe it was a little bit of they're worried for me. They don't know where I'm going, what I'm going to be doing, what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Because I left when I was 18, 19, I think, the first time I came to the US, and then officially moved when I was 22. I'm 36 years now, mate. Getting old, Jack. Getting old. Time flies, mate.
Yeah, I don't need to hear you preaching that.
Yeah, so you know, look, all in all, it wasn't positive and it wasn't encouraging. So that's something for all the listeners out there, that it's a long way to the top and it's an only way to the top. And people that love you and care about you the most are probably going to be the ones that will want to bring you down first. Not because they don't care, not because they don't love you. It's just because they're scared for you. So it's very hard ignoring that noise from loved ones. What anyone else says, I don't give a shit. I just goes through one ear and out the other, because everyone's got an opinion these days. If you know who you are, if you know your values, then it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks, right?
Right. Well, you know, you take their feedback into account. I mean, they're the people that care about you, and you want to hear they've always been there, done that in a lot of ways. But it almost sounds like you had a much overriding why versus reacting to any kind of pain. Is that the situation here?
Oh, 100%, mate. I mean, you know, maybe some of it came from being bullied as a kid too. You know what I mean? You got a chip on your shoulder and you're never perfect. And eventually, you know, what tends to happen? You're competing against the naysayers from a young age, because I did a lot of self-evaluation. I've really gone down the path of philosophy, stoicism, reading, religious readings and whatnot. And then you start doing a lot of self-evaluation, start looking deep. And maybe it was a chip on my shoulder from my younger days, that I initially was competing with the Joneses. I bought the cars, Jack, I bought the properties, I bought it all. And then I came to the realization that more of these things just equal more problems. It doesn't let you be free. It's like you're a slave to belongings. So you get rid of that. And then what eventually happens is you stop competing with the Joneses and someone else. You start competing with yourself. I want to be better tomorrow than I was today. So that's kind of how I live my life now. But yeah, mate, look, I've always been the type of character where if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And if it costs me my neck, well, so be it. You know, other people are smarter. They'll just open the door and go to the other side. I'll put my head through the wall if I have to, because I don't know how to open the door. But still, we get to the same place, don't we? I do it a lot harder and a lot more strainful on my body. But mate, look, it's for me, you know, again, it was ego. Don't have that as much anymore. Now it's a bit different. It's more about my family. Want to retire my dad, or already retired my mom, retired my uncle. So now I'm kind of pushing and grinding for them. If you ask me, mate, I could sleep under a bridge. I really don't need much. I like nice things, but I don't need much. Well, there's one thing that I need, and that's a cigar. I love to smoke a cigar. That's my vice. I smoke around 3 or 4 cigars a day. So give me a cigar and I'm good to go, mate. But other than anything else, I've come full circle, mate. Don't need it. Don't want it. I know it doesn't make me happy. Being fulfilled is you know, being with someone you love and having good people around you that care for you and that love you. And health is a very important factor too, mate.
You mentioned earlier that you kind of was about a year and a half in kind of the dumps, in kind of a depression. What tips or strategies, if somebody is going through that today, what did you do to pull yourself out?
Oh, well, mate. Look, I'm very fortunate. I didn't have too many experiences with depression over my life. I do suffer from anxiety and panic attacks, manageable. I think that's passed on from my family. It's in the genes. It's not easy, mate. You know, I've broken many bones playing football and soccer, and I always say I'd rather break another bone than have anxiety. It really sucks. It's painful, but again, it's manageable if you know how to deal with it. Look, when I had a tough time when I first moved to the US, a lot of things hit me at once, and I think I remember the moment clearly. What happened is you come to the realization that you kind of can't hit any lower, and the only lower place to go would be 6 feet under, and that's never an option. And I remember very clearly, I just got my ass up off the floor and I went into the office and I just started chipping away stronger and harder than ever. You know, I think there's something to be said about work and business and being busy. Granted, I can go into more depth on that, but I'll just try and keep it simple, where it doesn't allow you to really think about stupid crap that goes on. You know what I mean? Especially if you have that purpose and that why and that bigger picture of what you're doing, why you're doing it, then you forget about all the little nitty gritty and that kind of the work that you do every day can also pull you out of a dump. And no matter how hard it gets, mate, you got to keep persevering. You just got to keep pushing forward. You can't stop. There's no stopping is not an answer. Giving up is not an option, period.
Well, you mentioned earlier you're kind of bothered by the younger generation that is coming up, that's showing laziness and a few other characteristics you don't really care for. It's obvious that you're quite the go-getter. Based on what you're talking about and your energy and expressiveness so far, I almost kind of see a Gary Vaynerchuk or something on the other side here right now.
No, but, Gary wishes he was me, man. I'm 6'3", 230 pounds. He's too short.
But what I think is always interesting is there anything that you do to maintain this level of mindset or activity? I understand, you know, it sounds like you've really established your why. That's a big thing that I keep pushing for a lot of people. You got to identify your why. But there's got to be, is there anything else that you do to just keep your mind fed the way you need it?
I don't need any drugs. I look in the mirror, I'm high. Life. Live it. Life. Life is too short. Life is too short. You know what I mean? Like, it flies by. What's the point? If you're sad and angry, let it go. Come on, let's move. Let's get it done. What do you want? Let's work for it. You know what I mean? Let's laugh. Let's joke around. Let's be stupid. Let's walk around without any pants on. I don't know.
So, well, you're a very rare breed then. You know, I have to be, I'm constantly, it's almost a 24/7 thing for me. I'm constantly listening to podcasts. I'm constantly listening to audiobooks. I'm constantly having conversations like this in an effort to maintain a certain mindset associated with what we do.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, look, for me, I meditate, I pray a lot, I read philosophy, that keeps me calm. So I'm not bloody anxious all day and every day, you know. I read a lot of Jesus's teachings, it just puts me in peace. But man, I am ready to go. As soon as I get out of bed, it's like a bee stung me in the ass, mate. I'm ready to go. And of course, I mean, you need to have a little bit of a coffee, a little bit of a meditation. I turn on CNBC, light up my cigar, and then kind of get the body moving, half an hour, 45 minutes, hit the gym, and we're good to go. Sure, I have my bad days, mate. I'm tired. I'm getting older. My neck is sore today. I can bloody hardly move it, mate. You know what I mean? But no, I mean, we just got to, I don't know, mate. I don't know. Look, for me, you know, the why, if you have something to work for that's bigger and better than yourself, then I think that's your answer. And what that is, you got to find it. Because you'll let yourself down. You'll wake up sometimes. You'll be tired. You won't want to go to the gym, or you won't want to work. But if you're working for someone else, be it a loved one, be it a bigger, be it a cause, you won't let them down. You can't. That's why a lot of people like to have private trainers when they go to the gym, right? Because you got someone else that's going to be there. So it automatically makes you have to go there because you don't want to let another person down. So find your why and your purpose that is not you and that is someone else. And then you won't be able to stop. I can't. I mean, I've got a lot of people on my payroll, from employees to family. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And I know I can't stop.
Just to remind everybody, head over to ohiocashflow.com to learn what Angelo and his team are up to. And stay tuned, because what's coming next is going to be me asking Angelo about his 1,000+ flips and what type of lessons he's learned from there. But if you found some value in what we've talked about so far, do us a quick favor. Share this episode with one of your investor friends. And if you're watching us on YouTube or Rumble, do us a quick favor and like and subscribe. So Angelo, let's jump in. You've flipped over 1,000 properties. You've lost count at this point. What is one of the hardest lessons you've learned in that process?
Business is easy. People make it difficult. Business is easy, mate. People make it difficult. Look, I'll tell you what. I think we figured out almost everything there is associated with flips. Finding assets, prospecting for distressed properties, selling them, marketing, property management, everything, except one thing, rehabs. And I don't think we're ever going to figure that out, because I don't remember a rehab that we were on budget or under budget. Every rehab goes over budget. So everyone listening, you always have to leave yourself a margin of safety. And I'm talking about, if your rehab cost is 10 grand, you put down 15, 30 to 50% more on a good day. And mate, it's very hard finding trustworthy contractors. I think, you know, most of the folks, if they're very good, they're going to have a full-blown, legitimate online branded reviewed company, and they're going to charge out of the ass. So you can't make any margin if you work with those folks. So you're probably going to have to work with more of a lower socio demographic individual or individuals. And it's just going to get, it can get messy. It can get dirty. It can get problematic. I stopped counting, Jack, at $2 million in losses to contractors. I don't even want to think about it. It's just a cost of doing business. You know, they take a draw, buy a boat. They take a draw, buy a car. They take a draw, buy drugs. They take a draw, buy materials, use it on another job. They take a draw, they just disappear. I've had it all, mate. I've heard it all. I've seen it all. Once you do, look, if you start flipping as many as we do, you hit an economies of scale standpoint, you start having more volume, and you've already kind of gone through all of the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to contractors, then you find yourself two or three good ones, and you just keep working with them for as long as you possibly can. Another thing too, trust but verify. I've had a few people on board that have been with us for years and years and years, and I cut a $32,000 check because I trusted them. I thought the work was done. Of course, I don't have to verify. They've been with me for 2 years and they took the money and they disappeared. So even if you're in bed with someone for 2 or 3 years from a business relation standpoint, I think you should always trust but verify if the work has been done before you pay that final draw or a progress payment when it comes to contractors.
Well, let's talk about your turnkey properties for a minute. It sounds, yeah. Is it fair to say then, how does that work? If somebody is looking at a turnkey property with your organization, do you source the property? Do they pay the rehab? What, or do you,
yeah.
How does it look?
Great question, mate. So look, what I consider a full-blown proper turnkey company to be, and there's a lot of twists on the word turnkey, unfortunately, but in my opinion and a lot of other turnkey companies that have been around for as long as we have and even longer would say that a proper turnkey company is one that finds the property, buys it, renovates it, gets it tenanted, sells it, and manages it for you. So all an investor has to do is sit back, relax, and collect the rent. There is absolutely nothing that the investor is required to do other than connect with property management from time to time to approve certain maintenance expenses. So ultimately, mate, that's what we do. We source deals, we find them, we buy them with our own capital, we renovate them with our own capital, and we get them tenanted through our in-house property management company. We market them to investors, we sell them to investors, and then we continue managing the property for the lifetime of the investment. Simple as that. That's what a full-blown turnkey company does, a genuine turnkey company. Now, there are different twists where they'll say it's turnkey, but they pass you on to a realtor that makes a commission for selling you a property off the MLS where they don't really care about finding you the best deal in the best area. Then they're going to give you a third-party contractor, which is not in-house, it's not under the same roof. So if they do something wrong, they can point the finger at someone else. And then, of course, property management nickel and dimes you to death. So it's like a goose hunt. You don't know who to blame. With a higher cash flow, mate, if shit hits the fan, you can call me and scream at me because it's our fault at the end of the day because we're in charge from everything from top to bottom. So yeah, that's us, mate.
Well, if somebody was interested in a turnkey property, what questions should they be asking in order to make sure it's a good fit?
Mate, great question. Look, I think in my opinion, it's very important that turnkey companies have in-house property management, not third-party property managers, because then they are vested in your long-term success. Whatever they promised you on paper, they want to deliver in real life. If they pass you on to a third-party property manager, I think that's a recipe for disaster. And what turnkey companies are known to do quite often is sell properties for more than what they're worth to meet margin. Especially now with the market at all-time highs, they won't be able to find too many good deals. They're going to have to pay a pretty penny for it. And of course, to make their margin to continue having an operational business, they're going to have to sell it for more than what it's worth. So look out for that too. And it's very unfortunate. A lot of folks think if they're getting financing, they're somehow secured and safe, but they're not. I know a lot of players in the game that have community banks, in-house lenders where they manipulate and influence the appraisal. So even if you're getting financing, you're still not safe. You could still pay above market value for the property because it's all set up in a way and there's a lot of influence there, right? And just think about it, Jack. A lot of the mortgage lenders, if you're giving them a lot of volume, they're happy to cook the books a little bit to get business across the line, right? So those are the things to kind of ask turnkey companies. The biggest focus, in my opinion, would be property management, because in my eyes, anyone can find the property, buy it, renovate it, and sell it. Not many can manage well and manage well long term. So you know, in order to have long term continued success, property management is going to be your key. So all of the questions that you have for your turnkey provider should be about property management and their fees, their structure, their vacancies, occupancy, cost per turn, all of those nitty gritty numbers and stats.
Sure. You know, because I've been in real estate investing for such a long time too, I have to admit, when it comes to property managers, I have yet to find one where your interests are aligned. And I would imagine that is, you know, and I have to also say that I've been burned a couple times with turnkey rentals. What have you done to ensure that your team's interest and the investor's interests are aligned?
Great question, mate. You're not the only one. My God. You know, a lot of Aussies got burnt heavily, heavily, heavily in the US when I was first starting. And now you're not going to see an Aussie investing. Oh, what do we have that our interests are aligned, mate? Look, I think we keep a higher cash flow, very niche, very boutique, very exclusive. We only do around 4 or 5 deals a month, so we're not focused on pumping as many sales as possible. We only sell what we own, so we don't put our name behind any other product like a lot of the other sales, marketing, guru, turnkey companies out there do. We don't offer any financing. It's cash only. We lose 90% of business because of that, and we do that because we don't want the investor reading a book or listening to a podcast or going to a mastermind and thinking they should leverage a lot and buy a lot of properties, because by leveraging the money, they can buy a lot of properties. I've always said slow and steady wins the race. Build your portfolio with cash. Understand the true income of that portfolio before you start using leverage and supercharging the growth of that portfolio. So I think, mate, look, we're known for turning down more business than we take on. Going back to what I said, niche, boutique, and exclusive, I don't have a sales team. Every investor goes through me. Every introductory call goes through me. I speak to everyone. If I don't feel it's going to be a good fit, we don't work with you. Simple as that. So it's not, in a way, it's not about money to us, mate. Of course it is. I got to have a profitable business. But if I don't feel that I can help someone, or if I don't feel that we're on the same page, I'm not going to make the sale. I didn't do it from day one, Jack, when it took me 1.5 years to sell my first property with a higher cash flow. I didn't compromise my beliefs to make a sale. I'm not going to do it now when I've made millions. Very simple. Angela Ramora does not have a price. And I will never have a price. Throw trillions of dollars at me. You can't buy me, mate. I don't care. I don't care. So I think, I'm not sure if that kind of answers your question, you know, but in a way it might. Other than that, mate, you know, I mean, we're all vested in the investor success. We wear our heart on our sleeve. We're not perfect by any means. We make a mistake. It's an honest mistake. And if we make it, we'll pay for it. We'll fix it. You know, you got a bunch of people that are working very hard for everyone. And when someone works hard, they make mistakes. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's an honest mistake. And we always want what's best for everyone. And every decision is made with investors' best interests at heart. So, yeah.
Do you keep any of these rental properties for yourself?
Mate, I had over 20 something in my portfolio. And then we dried up on inventory. I had to sell out of most of them. I've still got around 10 or something like that. I'm just buying a 6 unit now. There's not a property that I don't sell that I wouldn't keep, mate. I initially came to the US to buy, fix, renovate, and hold, and then move back. But then one thing leads to another and you turn it into a business. But right now, mate, to be honest with you, if I had some lazy capital around and I didn't have to feed my staff, I'd probably just buy them for myself. I love them. Especially 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom homes. They're my favorite.
Yeah. So, well, Angelo, this has been a fantastic conversation. There's so much to learn from you. I hope you'll consider coming back again sometime. Again, I'm going to remind everybody, ohiocashflow.com, to learn what Angelo and his team are up to. And maybe you have a chance to work with Angelo or take advantage of getting his book. But Angelo, if you're ready, I'm going to jump into the rapid fire questions as we close out this show.
Let's do it, Mike.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
Financing will help you. Oh, wait, no. What lie do investors tell themselves and sometimes, oh my God, mate, you put me on the spot here. Bloody hell. They tell themselves and sometimes to others. Look, yeah, that it's you can build your portfolio quicker with financing, but not understanding the actual pitfalls, because they don't look at a worst case scenario basis. If in the case of a black swan event, inflation going up, interest rates going up, multifamily syndications, fixed interest rates at 2%, now they're at 8%, they're bleeding money. Sure. So financing is not necessarily a quicker and better way to grow your real estate portfolio.
Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now?
I'm reading The Daily Stoic and Jesus Calling every day.
Sure.
And of course, my book. But that one, I'm giving that one for free.
So there's no excuse for people not to pick it up.
There you go. How about that? I should sell it, right? I'm an idiot.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Go slower. because if you go as fast as you did, you're going to burn out like you did.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented to have the biggest time-saving impact to your business?
Virtual assistants. Incredible.
I've gotten that question answer quite a few times, and it's always interesting to hear, how have you selected your virtual assistants?
Through a third-party company. We spent 3 months training on every little process within property management and the turnkey business, recording, itemizing, writing down, and then they trained their team on the process, and there's always a backup in place. If one remote worker is sick or leaves, someone else fills the spot. Blessing. It was a blessing in disguise, Jack. I wanted to give it all away. I couldn't do it anymore. That was my final try to kind of, you know, not throw in the towel, and it was a blessing in disguise, and I love it. Right now, like, it's amazing.
Is there a question or concept you wished we would have covered here today?
No, mate. I think, you know, I've done hundreds of these, but this was a really good one.
Well, I really appreciate you being on. This has been fantastic, Angelo. You're an open book. I appreciate you being so candid with everybody. One last time, OhioCashflow.com. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes, but you're welcome back anytime. I hope you'll take me up on that.
Whenever you want, mate, I'm happy to be back.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.